All right. Well, our Sunday school class this morning is on Rahab and the two spies. So if you want to just turn up to Joshua 2, that's where most of our activity will be this morning. Joshua 2, verse 1 reads, "And Joshua, the son of Nun, sent out of Shittim two men to spy secretly, saying, 'Go, view the land, even Jericho.' They went and came into an harlot's house named Rahab and lodged there." For purposes of review, let's talk about what led up to this moment. I guess first we'll put ourselves in context of time. When these events occurred, we've got... According to this timeline, we've got the death of Moses about 1400 BC, the death of Joshua about 1375 BC. So this, the events that I'm going to talk about this morning are closer to this end of the chart, around 1400, immediately following the death of Moses. As we know from our reading, Israel was in the wilderness when Moses had just died. And we can see in chapter 1 of Joshua, starting at verse 1, tells us that the Lord speak unto Joshua, saying, "Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore, arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, unto the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel." We can see on our map where that is. We've got a nice little rectangle that shows us where they were is on the left side, and you can see Shittim, and then on the other side of the Jordan, you can see Jericho just about in the center of that picture. The Lord goes on to say in Joshua 1 and verse 3, "Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that I have given unto you, as I said unto Moses." In verse 6 of chapter 1, the Lord continues speaking to Joshua, saying, "Be strong and of good courage, for unto this people shalt thou divide for an inheritance the land which I swear unto their fathers to give them." Looking at verse 8, the Lord says to Joshua, "This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate therein day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then shalt thou make thy way prosperous, and then shalt thou have good success." Continues in verse 9, "Have not I commanded thee? Be strong and of good courage. Be not afraid. Neither be thou dismayed, for the Lord thy God is with thee whithersoever thou goest." So, in Joshua 1, the Lord is reminding Joshua of the words that he spoke to Moses, that he would be with Joshua and Israel as they've made their way into the land, and that they should have faith. They should be strong and of good courage. The Lord has promised that he would care for them and keep them safe, so they should not worry. Beginning in verse 10, Joshua takes this information and brings it to the officers of the people, instructing them to pass through the host and command the people to prepare for the time when they would pass over Jordan and go in to possess the land. It says, in verse 14, "Your wives, your little ones, and your cattle shall remain in the land which Moses gave you on this side Jordan, but ye shall pass before your brethren armed, all the mighty men of valor, and help them." Tells us that they would encounter hostile occupants as they entered the land, so their wives and children would remain behind until the men had possessed the land. All right, so our class this morning is on Rahab and the two spies. What do we know about Rahab? Well, We know that she was a Gentile. She's one of three women mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus. We can see that in Matthew 1, verses 5 through 6. In Joshua, she's mentioned, in Joshua 2, she's mentioned twice. In Joshua 6, her name appears three times. And in the New Testament, her name appears three times. We know from Hebrews 11, verse 31, that she had great faith. And her great works are mentioned in James 2 and verse 25. And of course, we know from our many studies and readings that faith and works go together. In Matthew 1, we see that she married Salmon and bore Boaz, and could explain Boaz's kindness to Ruth, because his mother was possibly an extremely good example for him and instilled that within him. In Genesis 38, her notable genealogy, we read, begins with Judah. We'll look at that in a little bit. We know that Rahab lived in Jericho. She was a Gentile. We know she had parents and siblings, but no children at that time. We know she was a harlot, and she, as I said, she was an example, great example of faith. We also know, reading through this, she lied. She lied to save the lives of the spies. We know from our readings at other times that other people lied, other great people. We know King David told lies. He told Jonathan to lie about his location. Throughout Scripture, lies are told to save lives. We also note that God did not punish these instances, unless, of course, it was selfish lying. Peter, we know, lied about his association with Jesus. We know also that the spies arrived at night. Could be because the crowds were moving around, and it was easy for them to blend into these crowds and not their attention not be as obvious. But we also know that they were seen. We don't know why they went to Rahab's house. We can't tell for sure from the text whether they sought her out or they simply, in the spirit of following along with the crowd, sort of ended up there. Maybe they knew what her occupation was, and it would not seem unusual for men to be going in and out of her house. We know from the text that she hid them immediately after they entered. So she must have known that they were spotted. Perhaps she did this because they were dressed differently, or maybe that's why they were spotted. They stood out because they were Israelites due to their dress. They had lived 40 years in the desert. So that right there might make them look different than the people that were in the city of Jericho. We know that they were in danger of death, and we know that through her actions, she put herself in danger by helping them. And it's clear that what caused her to take this action was her faith. She covers them with flax. That is part of the harvest, the Passover. This indicates for us that it occurred sometime in April. She took the time to lay the flax down on top of them to hide their location. We can imagine that had she not helped them, had they been left to cover themselves up on their own, they would not have done an adequate job. It would have been obvious that something was out of place. As we read about this, the flax might remind us of our walk, because during the harvest, the flax is pulled out by its roots. Those of us who grew up not in the truth but came to it later, can identify with this being pulled out from our roots. Our roots were not in the truth. They were somewhere else. So the flax is pulled out by its roots, and then it's laid in the sun to dry, and then it's retted, R-E-T-T-E-D, which is a process of immersion in water. This immersion softens it, so the high-quality fibers can be extracted from the flax. As I said, we, who are not in the truth to begin with, are pulled out by its roots, by our roots, and we are exposed to God's light. At some point, God willing, we are immersed in water, and the best of us remains. In verse 3, the king's messengers arrive. Verses 8 through 13, she talks to the spies. She tells them what they know, what she knows, her declaration of faith. So we're left to wonder, how did she gain this knowledge? She lives in Jericho. It's a large city. Perhaps a great volume of travelers. She picked up this knowledge. It has some similarities to Genesis 24, when Abraham sends Eliezer to get a wife for Isaac. He uses the same phrase that we see in there, God in heaven above and in earth beneath. So she'd gathered this knowledge from somewhere, and the phrasing that she uses we hear in other places. So it's not, this didn't simply occur that night. She must have been thinking about these things prior to their arrival. In verses 12 through 13, she pleads for her family's lives, which is we were reminded of Esther, a gentle pleading to a Jew for her life. And Esther pleads as a Jew with a Gentile to save her life. In verse 12, she uses the word token. This word is used with Noah. Circumcision is a token of the Abrahamic covenant. And we know the spies tested Rahab's faith, because when she lets them down without the token in verse 15, she does it based only on their word. Once she lets them down, they give her the token that we read about in verse 18. So, let's look at that. Why a scarlet thread? In Scripture, we see another instance of a scarlet thread. Let's turn to Genesis 38. This is the chapter in which Judah comes across a woman whom he supposes is a harlot, but is in fact his daughter-in-law. He goes in unto her, and she conceives. And we see in verse 24 of chapter 38 that 3 months passes from their meeting, and Judah learns of her pregnancy and orders her to be burnt for her whoredom. We're familiar with this story. She then produces the item Judah had pledged when he met her 3 months prior. In the time of her travail in verse 28, we see the scarlet thread was placed upon the wrist of Zerah. The story of the birth of these two children is remarkable, but something else is also very interesting. What is interesting about it is that Zerah's brother, Perez, is the great, 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 multiple generations grandfather of Selma. It's a little hard to point over here. You can see through this diagram, right up here, right there, and it goes along generation after generation up to the second column and then down. So you can follow that along and you'll see Salmon in there. He's near the top of that second column. So we can see through this diagram that Rahab was brought into the line of Christ through her husband, Salmon, a descendant of the firstborn of Judah. And here, what I thought was so interesting about it was whether Salmon was actually one of the spies that visited Rahab and gave her this line of scarlet thread, which we read about in verse 18 of Joshua 2. And it left me wondering, was that scarlet thread some kind of family heirloom passed down through the generations? I don't know, just a curious thing to ponder. All right, so we'll go back to Joshua. Keep one hand in Joshua and move back to Hebrews chapter 11. I mentioned this at the beginning. There it is. And if we look at verse 31, we see in Hebrews 11 and 31 that her faith saved her from perishing with those that believed not when she received the spies. We can also jump over quickly to James 2 and verse 25. We see here that Rahab was justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them out another way. So we can look at Joshua 2, verse 16. And she said unto them, get ye to a mountain, the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you and hide yourselves there 3 days until the pursuers be returned, and afterward may ye go your way. We can imagine the city wall of Jericho was quite high. So we have to wonder, with her house on the top, how was that thread seen? The wall was intended to protect the occupants, so it had to be quite high to keep any invaders out. Rahab's house sat on top of that wall of the city, so the thread in the window was that much higher, several feet above that. In verse 18, we can look at the word thread, look it up in Strong's, and we see it's defined as a thread. So, very small. We can see from this definition that it was a small, almost a very slight piece of material. It was tied around a baby's wrist, perhaps. But anyway, it's not capable of being seen from the ground for certain. Right? Very tiny. But we have to ask ourselves, that little tiny piece of thread, what was the intention? To be seen by the warriors from the ground? That seems impossible. It's small, dark. If we look at Joshua 6, the Lord tells Joshua to surround the city of Jericho. Starting at verse 3, and ye shall compass the city, all ye men of war, and go round about the city once. Thus shalt thou do 6 days. And 7 priests shall bear before the ark 7 trumpets of ram's horns, and the 7th day ye shall compass the city 7 times, and the priests shall blow with the trumpets. And it shall come to pass that when they make a long blast with the ram's horns, and when ye hear the sound of the trumpet, all the people shall shout with a great shout, and the wall of the city shall fall down flat, and the people shall ascend up every man straight before him. So the blowing of horns and shouting voices, that's what's going to knock the wall down. Looking at verse 20. So the people shouted when the priests blew with the trumpets, and it came to pass when the people heard the sound of the trumpet, and the people shouted with a great shout, that the wall fell down flat, so that the people went up into the city, every man straight before him, and they took the city. It wasn't until that point that they actually came in contact with the wall. While the wall of the city fell down flat, Rahab's house was left intact. If not, how could she and her family be retrieved? Look at verse 22. But Joshua had said unto the two men that had spied out the country, go into the harlot's house and bring out thence the woman and all that she hath, as ye swear unto her. And the young men that were spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father and her mother and her brethren and all that she had. And they brought out all her kindred and left them without the camp of Israel. So I ask again, who was the thread for? Israel approached the city as instructed by the Lord. Israel shouted with a great shout, and the walls came tumbling down, as the song tells us, except for Rahab's house. So, brothers and sisters, the scarlet thread must have been for the angels of Yahweh, a marking for them to ensure that the occupants of the house on the wall were not harmed as they went about destroying the city. Israel did not come in contact with the wall until after it had collapsed. So this might remind us of Passover that we read about in Exodus. The blood was placed around the door, saving those that adhered to Yahweh's instructions. Let's turn back to Exodus 12. Exodus 12, starting at verse 1. And the Lord spake unto Moses and Aaron in the land of Egypt, saying, this month shall be unto you the beginning of months. It shall be the first month of the year to you. Speak ye unto all the congregation of Israel, saying, in the tenth day of this month they shall take to them every man a lamb, according to the house of their fathers, a lamb for an house. And if the household be too little for the lamb, let him and his neighbor next unto his house take it according to the number of the souls. Every man according to his eating shall make your account for the lamb. Your lamb shall be without blemish. A male of the first year ye shall take out from the sheep or from the goats, and ye shall keep it up until the 14th day of the same month. And the whole assembly of the congregation of Israel shall kill it in the evening. Verse 7. And they shall take of the blood and strike it on the two side posts and on the upper doorpost of the houses wherein they shall eat it. And they shall eat the flesh in that night, roast with fire and unleavened bread, and with bitter herbs they shall eat it. Eat not of it raw, nor sodden at all with water, but roast with fire, his head with his legs, and with the pertinence thereof. Verse 12. For I will pass through the land of Egypt in this night, and will smite all the firstborn in the land of Egypt, both man and beast, and against all the gods of Egypt, while I execute judgment, I am the Lord. And the blood shall be to you for a token upon the houses where you are. And when I see the blood, I will pass over you, and the plague shall not be upon you to destroy you when I smite the land of Egypt. It's also interesting to note it appears that not all of her family were convinced of their opportunity for salvation. Going back to Joshua, chapter 2, and looking at chapter 6, look at Joshua 2 and verse 13 first. It reads, "And that ye will save alive my father, and my mother, and my brethren, and my sisters, and all that they have, and deliver our lives from death." So she's asking for those people to be saved. Jump over to Joshua 6 and look at verse 23. "And the young men that were spies went in and brought out Rahab and her father, her mother, her brethren, and all that she had. And they brought all her kindred and left them without the camp of Israel." The text provides no explanation for the absence of her sisters, but it's clear that something occurred which resulted in Rahab's sisters not being included in the recovery from the destruction of Jericho. It's also interesting to note the verbiage used in reference to the man who recovered Rahab and her family. In the beginning of this story, they are men sent to spy. Even in chapter 6 and verse 23, they are referred to as young men that were spies. But they are also called messengers. Look at verse 17 of chapter 6. "And the city shall be accursed, even it and all that are therein, to the Lord. Only Rahab the harlot shall live, she and all that are with her in the house, because she hid the messengers that we sent." Jump to verse 25 of chapter 6. "And Joshua saved Rahab the harlot alive and her father's household and all that she had, and she dwelleth in Israel even unto this day, because she hid the messengers which Joshua sent out to spy out Jericho." You look up this word in Strong's, the definition tells us it's from an unused root meaning dispatch as a deputy. It's used as the word angel 111 times, messenger 98 times, ambassador 4 times. So it's a messenger, a representative, could be an angel. Now, I'm not suggesting that these men, the spies specifically, were actually angels. It seems clear from the text that they were in fact men. But it does seem that the phrase messenger was treated as an elevation of their status amongst the people, so they were referred to almost in a reverential manner for what they had done, as a way to honor their efforts or recognize the efforts, the bravery that was required to help Israel. We know that God's messengers, those who do the work of God, they're not necessarily angels. They're doing nothing more than the work of God. So we can see these two men were executing the will of God. Hebrews, we don't need to turn back there, but remembering Hebrews 11 and 31 and James 2 and 25 highlights this phrasing for us, referring to them as spies in Hebrews, while James says Rahab received the messengers. So what can we take away from this examination of Rahab and the events surrounding the fall of Jericho? Looking at Joshua 2 in summary, we can see the following. In verse 1 through 3, we see that Joshua sends two men. Verses 23 to 24, the two men returned to Joshua. They went out and they've come back. Verse 4 through 7, we see that Rahab hides the men and diverts their pursuers' attention, saving the spies' lives. And then when we come around to verse 22, the men hide in the mountains 3 days, saving their lives from the pursuers at the instruction of Rahab. Comparing 8 through 13, Rahab confesses her faith, and she seeks salvation for her family. And finally, in verse 21, we see that she acts on this faith and binds the thread in the window, saving their lives. We'll look at verse 14. It tells us, "Our life for yours, if ye utter not our business." So she needed to keep that to herself. And then by verse 20, they tell her, "If thou utter our business, we will quit the oath." So the consequence for her failure to act. And if we look at these verses, comparing them back and forth through that chapter, we end up right in the middle, verse 15 through 19. It reads, "Then she let them down by a cord through the window, for her house was upon the town wall, and she dwelt upon the wall. And she said unto them, Get ye to the mountain, lest the pursuers meet you, and hide yourselves there 3 days, until the pursuers be returned, and afterward may ye go your way. And the men said unto her, We will be blameless if of this thine oath which thou hast made us swear. Behold, when we come into the land, thou shalt bind this line of scarlet thread in the window," which is the token I had mentioned earlier, "which thou didst let us down by, and thou shalt bring thy father and thy mother and thy brethren and all thy father's household home unto thee. And it shall be that whosoever shall go out of the doors of thy house into the street, his blood shall be upon his head, and we will be guiltless. And whosoever shall be with thee in this house, his blood shall be on our head, if any hand be upon him." So, Rahab frees the spies from the city. They give her a token of their word. They promise to save all in her house if she displays this token. Reminds us of our situation, shouldn't it? We must remain in the household of Yahweh, in the ecclesia and this covenant relationship we've entered into, because failure to do so means that we have wandered out into the street, the world in our parlance, and we will meet certain death if we do so. So what do we need to do each day, each week? We need to humbly recognize that we are flawed. But at the same time, we should rejoice that we have opportunity to meet those that obey Yahweh's commands in the coming kingdom. It is through God's mercy that we can achieve this for ourselves, through our own faith and our own works. And God willing, we have opportunity to meet Rahab and other faithful followers of Yahweh in that day.